Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining me. You're listening to Mental Illness Matters Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. I am your host, Chrissy Hodges, and I've been doing this show for several years, bringing you guests that are breaking down stigma by talking about their own lived experience. It's exciting, it's educational, and what it does is it puts a face and a story to illnesses, mental illnesses that we aren't, a lot of us don't know about, and so when we don't know something, we fear it. So what we do here is we bring people on that have different mental illnesses. They get to talk about what the onset was like, what it's like to live with the disorder, and then we usually try to do a few, you know, say a few things to try to break down some stigma. A little bit about the show. I've been doing this for several years, and it is completely listener-supported. And if you are interested in supporting the show, you can go from a dollar to a show to whatever you feel like you want to give. And how you can donate that will be www.patreon.com, patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. There you'll find out a little bit more about me and my story with OCD, the type that's called Pure O, a video. So poorly done, I'm sorry, and I need to update that. And then a way that you can look and see the other people that are pledging, and the way I see it is pledging to end stigma about mental illness. So without further ado, I wanted to get on with the show today. We have a guest today that's going to come and talk to us about eating disorders and bulimia specifically. I have never had anyone on the show to talk about this, so I'm super excited. A little bit quickly about her, and then I want her to get into the story and some of the things that we can do to break down stigma surrounding eating disorders. Kate is 24 years old. She is based in Colorado. Woohoo! That's where the show is being broadcasted. She's a student and advocate, and she does advocacy through the Colorado Mental Wellness Network. If you follow the show, you'll remember that I had Amanda Smith on a few months ago to talk about her experience and this organization. She is a writer and a blogger, a social media marketer. She does fundraising and a mishmash of all kinds of other stuff. She went to the UK for her long-term treatment, and which is awesome. I can't wait to hear about that. I mean, not that she had to be in treatment, but that she went over there for it. And she's been in recovery for almost 2 years. She works as a reading tutor. She's a crazy craft lady, and she's learning how to snowboard, which is essential for living in Colorado, I think. So let's go ahead and bring her on. Kate, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Hi. It's so great to finally talk to you in person.
You too.
We just found out that we were both in Colorado. She posted on my page, Mental Illness Isn't a Trend, and then when I read her bio, I thought, holy crap, we're right down the street from each other. So we only have about 25 minutes, so I don't want to take up any more time. Kate, I definitely want you to kind of have the reins on this and tell us a little bit about what, you know, the onset of your bulimia, and talk about how it felt, and just tell us the whole story of your lived experience.
Sure, absolutely. So when I was young, I had problems with binge eating, and that was something that I would do to deal with some of the emotions that I was feeling. I also have OCD, and I felt a lot of shame around that, and binge eating was a way for me to deal with that. And then in adulthood, I was kind of what they call a late bloomer with disordered eating. It didn't start when I was a teenager. When I was an adult, I had decided that I wanted to lose some weight because I had reached an obese weight. So I did it healthily. I was doing all the right things, but I missed the binge eating. It was something that I always had by my side to help me through these negative emotions, and I had never learned how to deal with them appropriately. So it started at a Thanksgiving dinner 4 or 5 years ago. I had decided, okay, I've been on my diet and it's fine. On Thanksgiving, I can eat what I want and it'll be okay. And when I started eating, I realized how much I missed the binge eating as a coping mechanism. So I ate and I ate and I ate and I ate. And I had this moment of panic when I had realized how much I had eaten and how long I was going to have to work it off, and all of this stuff. So I made up a really lame excuse at my grandparents' house, and I said that I had to leave because I was nervous about driving, which is kind of true, but not really. And I stopped at a gas station, and I purged. And that was the first time I ever did it, and I immediately felt relief. And I was like, okay, it's going to be okay now. And I didn't immediately spiral down into binging and purging all the time, but it was something that I kind of kept at the back of my mind that, you know, if things get bad, then I can go ahead and binge, and then I'll just purge, and it'll be okay. And so over the next several months, it was just something that I would do occasionally, but it was creeping up on me. I would do it, you know, once a month, and then I was doing it a few times a month, and then I would say, okay, I'll only do it on the weekends. And then it got to the point where it was this overwhelming drive to do it, and it had become completely independent of wanting to deal with negative emotions. It had just become, I have an overwhelming drive to eat, and I have to eat, and I need to eat. And I would shake with anxiety trying to fight off the urge, but I would break down. And so it started to become, you know, on the weekends, and then I would do it during the week. And then before I knew it, it had spiraled out of control to the point where I was binging and purging 6 to 8 times a day. And I knew that it was bad. I knew it was not something that I needed to be doing, and I knew that it was a negative coping mechanism. I'd already been in treatment for substance use disorder, and I recognized the addictive behavior. I knew that this was an addictive behavior. It was a thought that I would push out of my mind. A little thought would creep up that'd be like, you're behaving like an addict. And I would say, no, it's different. I'm not drinking. I'm not doing drugs. It's okay. It's just food. And then The day that I realized that it was, that I had to listen to that voice in my head that was telling me that it was an addictive behavior, was I finished binging and purging, and I went out into my living room, and I saw what my life looked like. There were just ripped boxes of food and empty bowls and crumbs all over the carpet, and, like, the coffee table was just really sticky with all this chocolate, and it was gross. It was really gross, and I realized how bad it had gotten to the point where all I was doing was eating and purging and eating and purging and eating and purging. And I finally was like, yeah, this is definitely a huge problem. And I went into treatment again at that point.
Let me ask you a question. And I think that this is a misconception by people when they think about eating disorders. Are they classified as anxiety disorders?
I don't know if they're actually classified as anxiety disorders, but I definitely see the connection. I mean, I consider OCD an anxiety disorder as well, and that it's very similar feelings, where it just gets to the point where you can't tolerate anxious emotions anymore, and so they're overwhelming, and you do the first thing that comes to mind to get rid of the anxious feeling immediately. And that's what purging was to me at the time, was just an immediate extinguishing of those anxious feelings.
Okay, and so I wrote, and I usually go back after I describe the interview, but I wrote in there, and I wasn't sure if I was correct, so I would like to get your opinion on it. I wrote that you were going to talk about the eating disorder bulimia, and it's not just about being thin. And I wrote that because...
Not.
Okay, then elaborate on that, because, you know, the misconception and stigma out there is, oh, people with eating disorders, they're obsessed with their bodies, they only care about themselves, they're selfish, things like that. So tell us about that distinction.
So, and it's difficult for me because it did start when I was losing weight. And so when I started binging and purging, yes, I was actively trying to lose weight. However, the binging and purging was something that happened to me despite me trying to lose weight healthily. And so I would eat my healthy meals, and then this urge would come up. And so the purging, it wasn't like, oh, I just want to eat a bunch of cookies and then not gain any more weight back. That wasn't the thought process. It was, oh my gosh, I need sugar, fat, I need cookies, I need cake, I need all of this in my mouth to make me feel okay. And then getting rid of it was it was just part of the process because you eat so much that you're physically so uncomfortable that it's just something that you feel you have to do. So mm-hmm. for me, it was never about keeping my weight down or making sure that I didn't gain weight. It was I miss the instant feel good of eating these things. I miss the instant feel good of just going blank and consuming hand to bowl to mouth over and over and over and over and over again. And during those times, I didn't feel anything. And so it was a coping mechanism, much like using alcohol or drugs or self-harm, which I've also struggled with. Mm-hmm. It was that sort of mechanism, not I want to go out with my family, but it's not on my diet. I'm going to throw it up after. That wasn't the thought process at all.
Right. And I was actually thinking that that might be a comparable analogy to, maybe even like smoking a cigarette when people are addicted. It's that behavior. It's almost the behavior mm-hmm. that you crave. You're not even getting anything out of it, really, but it's just mm-hmm. That continual behavior.
Yep. And there are some really interesting research coming out about how the bulimia itself isn't about weight loss, but it's oftentimes instigated by weight loss. The body, when you're in a caloric deficit losing weight, it's your body is screaming out, I don't want to lose more weight. It's a survival mechanism. And so you get this mm-hmm. overwhelming urge to binge, and it's something that can get out of control. Mm-hmm. And so I found that interesting that a lot of times it's brought on by caloric restriction, but it's not necessarily about it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into the treatment that you received, one question I like to ask people, because I think this is common amongst people who have mental illness, did you, and this can apply also to the other things, the other illnesses and symptoms that you had for other disorders, did you know that you were sick? I mean, did you know that you were experiencing something that could be treated or that had a name to it? Like, for example, I had OCD for 12 years without having any clue that it was OCD because it didn't follow the typical pattern of OCD. When I found out, I was mortified that I was now mentally ill, but that's another whole other mm-hmm. story. So did you know before you walked out and saw your apartment the way it was, wow, I have an illness and I need to seek treatment?
When it first started, I knew that doing it continuously would be bulimia. But I was justifying it to myself, oh, I'm only doing it so very often, so I don't have bulimia technically. Because to be diagnosed, you have to be doing it a certain amount. So I was like, well, it's under control. And I, no matter how much it was increasing, I would just keep telling myself, it's under control. I can control it. It's okay. And then it wasn't until that moment when I walked out into my living room that I said, okay, I have bulimia, and I know that I have bulimia. And I think it's an illness that people are very much aware of, so it's easy to recognize in yourself, but it's just getting past that, oh, I have it under control belief.
And that is that an often a thought with people who have bulimia?
Yes, when I was in treatment, and with other eating disorders too, of people saying, well, I don't want to get completely better because I can keep it to a certain amount. I can keep it under control. I can restrict just enough, or I can binge and purge just enough. And it's difficult to admit that it's all or nothing. You're binging or purging or you're not. And so I did come across it a lot, people saying, well, I don't think it's really a problem yet, or, okay, I recognize that it's a problem, but I can just get a little bit better and still hold on to it. And that's a really difficult right. thing to let go of in treatment as well.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the damage that bulimia can do to someone's body.
Well, in the actual binging and purging process, what can happen is you need more and more and more food to get the same effect. And so there have been people that have actually ruptured their stomachs during binging and purging. I have chronic acid reflux from the bulimia because it damaged the lower sphincter in my esophagus. It can cause, well, some of the physical symptoms that you'll see is really swollen lymph nodes that will give you the chipmunk cheeks kind of thing. And then the acid rots your teeth. It fortunately didn't go on long enough for me to have that side effect, but it does rot your teeth eventually. And it's a huge strain on your heart as well, because the electrolyte balance gets all out of whack. And there have been people that have had heart attacks during binging and purging, people that go to the hospital because they're so dehydrated.
Wow. And the comparison still, it really does stand out when you think about that with illness and addiction behavior, because it's, oh, I know that these things can happen to my body, but I'm not doing it like other people are, so it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we have about 12 minutes left, and I definitely want to save a few minutes to talk about stigma, but I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about how you got into the treatment facility that you did in the UK, and what that was like and what people can expect if they are looking at going to a treatment program for an eating disorder.
Well, when I started treatment for the bulimia, I originally went to a hospital in Texas where I lived at the time, and my insurance pulled out after, I think, 14 days. So I was inpatient at the time, and it was just very regulated meal planning and making sure that I wasn't binging and purging. And so I didn't really get into the therapy there or the treatment. After my insurance pulled out and I couldn't afford treatment on my own, I looked into treatment in the UK where my parents lived. And there I got a lot more comprehensive treatment where, I mean, a good portion of eating disorder treatment is regulating your food intake. And so a lot of it is learning how to eat properly again and at the correct time, making balanced plates and learning to be okay with eating regularly instead of restricting, binging, purging, et cetera. And then on top of that, the program that I went to, they offered a lot of different things, and it was sort of try everything out and see what works for you, and then that will become part of your treatment plan. And so I got a lot of benefit out of cognitive behavioral therapy because I was able to say, okay, this is the thought that's happening, and this is what that thought makes me want to do, but here are alternatives to that thought. And then some of it was tied in with my OCD treatment was the exposure and response prevention, and we did some of that exposure and response prevention with the bulimia as well, which was where, you know, they would present me with something like a bunch of mini cupcakes, and I was supposed to eat two, and I had to sit with the overwhelming urge to eat them all and deal with the anxiety of not being able to eat them all. And that was very difficult.
Wow.
And I had a lot of panic attacks during that part. But
as someone who's gone through ERP, I can imagine that was torture.
Yes. And it's not like, you know, with drugs and alcohol, you can completely abstain from drugs and alcohol. You can't completely abstain from food. And so it's something that you have to, you have to learn to eat a moderate amount and then sit with the incredible urge to eat more. And that part's really difficult.
Wow. People probably don't, when I try to explain what ERP is, people cannot understand the severity of it. And, you know, people are probably listening and going, oh, whatever, just resist the cupcakes. I'm sitting here going, I bet your anxiety was at a 10.
Sustained
amount of time.
Yes. And then I got a lot of benefit out of mindfulness, meditation therapy, yoga, because another part of my bulimia was if I was unable to purge, because it does get to that point where your body just will absolutely not cooperate with you on it anymore.
Wow.
And so I would exercise excessively to make up. for the amount I'd eaten. And so they got me into yoga, where I would learn to be physically active but not torturing myself.
So how long were you in therapy? Or in, so, I'm sorry, an inpatient program?
Inpatient, I did not do in the UK. I lived with my parents initially nearby, and then I moved out to a separate apartment.
Okay.
But inpatient was the 2 weeks in Texas. But I was in the UK. I was there for 5 days a week from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. at first.
Wow.
And then over time, I would go down to 3 days a week, and then I would go from 3 days a week from 8 to 3, and then 2 days a week from 8 to 3, and then 2 days a week from 8 to 1. And so it was a very structured stepping down process. And during that time, I would volunteer, because I couldn't work or go to school on my medical treatment visa. So I would volunteer and explore hobbies on my own, you know, try to find some interest beyond food and alcohol. And developed friendships, and I started rock climbing. And so it was just a very a structured process of being in full-time care down to come in for the classes that are particularly helpful to you.
Right. Now, this is going to be a horribly structured question, but I can see just by hearing the amount of the intensity and the time spent in therapy that there are people, I'm assuming, with bulimia that kind of like OCD and kind of like addiction behaviors, where they're scared to let go of the safety, even if it's miserable, the safety of the behavior or the safety of dealing with the anxiety that way. And then having to go into a treatment that takes so long and so much energy and intensity that they, you know, people may even feel like there's no way I could do that and be successful. So what advice do you have for people who are maybe listening to this and thinking, oh, my God, I couldn't do that. No way. And I don't even think I can give up the behavior in order to ease the anxiety. What advice do you have people if they were to be feeling that way?
Well, if you are strong enough to tolerate the horrible misery that is bulimia, the time that it takes to engage in bulimic behavior, the physical torture you put through your body, if you're strong enough to deal with that, I mean, for years on end in some cases, you're strong enough to go through 6 months of treatment. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of strength to tolerate an eating disorder. So if you have that, then you absolutely have the strength to recover from it as well. And it's just so much worth it at the end. Yes, treatment was very, very difficult, and it was long, and it took a lot of untangling the mess that was my mind and emotions. But, I mean, my quality of life now, it's worth five times the amount of time that it took to recover.
Do you still struggle with the thoughts or the urges, or does that dissipate with time?
Lately, I have been struggling with eating a little more than I should be. I haven't been binging, but I have been eating more than I should be, and that's something that I'm working on with my therapist. And so it is always there. It's just so easy, you know. It's not like with a drug addiction, you have to make the conscious decision to go out. It's, oh, I can just reach over there and grab that and eat it. You know, so it's really difficult to resist that urge to just engage in the behavior because it's so easy to do. But as far as the binging and purging goes, I learned one particular method that's really helpful for me is play the tape out, thinking about, okay, if I do this, what's tomorrow going to be like? And then if I do it again tomorrow, then what's the next day going to be like? And then what's a week from now going to be like? If I do it once, it's going to be that much harder to resist doing it again. So that's something I keep in mind is, no matter how uncomfortable this urge is right now, if I engage with it, the urge next time is going to be even stronger.
Right. Who is susceptible to developing eating disorders?
Everybody. Absolutely everybody.
Yep.
I've met people from ages 14 to in their 50s with eating disorders, men, women, I mean, anybody is susceptible to it. And I think there are a lot more people with disordered eating that you wouldn't expect, because, like, when I was really active in my eating disorder, I looked very fit and strong because I was exercising so much. So it's not always the frail person that you see on the street that you think maybe right. they have an eating disorder. It could be anybody, any size, any gender. Everybody's susceptible.
Right. You never know what people are going through, despite the appearance mm-hmm. they are trying to show you. So I want you to take us out of this interview. We have about 2 minutes left, and give us a little piece of advice on stigma surrounding eating disorders and what we can do as individuals to not exacerbate the stigma surrounding eating disorders.
I think simply letting go of assumptions that you have about it and really listening to people, because a lot of people just, they have this idea in their mind of what an eating disorder is like and who it impacts. And I think if you listen to the stories, you see that there are people that they do it based on their anxieties, and they do it based on, you know, that they're just susceptible to addictive behavior. There's so many ways that people get into this type of situation. And so I think just listening to what people have to say about their eating disorder, and then for people that have eating disorders, being willing to talk about it. And I know that there's a book called The Food and Feelings Workbook that talks about 7 feelings that people with eating disorders have particular trouble with, and one of the big ones is shame. And I think that definitely goes into some of the silence and the stigma around eating disorders, is we're just ashamed of them.
Right.
And I think I found in my personal experience that the more I talk about it, the less shame I have.
And you know what? Another thing I'm going to throw out there, because it applies to most eating disorders, just to kind of wrap up, is you said it yourself, everyone's susceptible. So people who have mental illness and bulimia and eating disorders are not weak. And that's one thing.
Oh, absolutely not.
That's one thing we're proving with this radio podcast. So I am going to wrap up. But if you want more of a discussion between me and Kate, you can head over to my Google Hangout at Chrissy Hodges on Gmail. I'll be posting both. And Kate, I want to thank you for being here today. And we're going to talk a little bit more, hopefully, about the stigma surrounding eating disorders. You've been listening to Mental Illness Matters Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. We'll see you next week. You give us 30 minutes, we'll give you a new perspective on mental illness.